Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studio. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, it's Friday. Fri-yay, we like to call it around here. It's a Snowmageddon Fri-yay, and we need some sound effects. Hit it, man. Delayed? Fri-yay! What is with the buttons? Like, you push the buttons and then there.
I think the first button of every show is always delayed for so it's got to wake up or something.
It's like a grenade with the cook off. You pull the pin and then, you know, the spoon flies and you wait. No, you don't wait. You throw it.
Oh, he needed to wait. He was enjoying the Snowmageddon, the hotkeys, yeah.
Snowmageddon. So, how you doing? JP on the board, by the way. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm enjoying this, looking at the snow.
Snowmageddon. So, we didn't lose power. Wonderful thing. We're in the studio live. Are we the only ones doing our live show today that we know?
I don't think so. I think there's a, well, I don't know. I don't think so, but I think Dale did his show this morning.
Did he?
I think Bongino I saw was live today. He's in Florida, though, so
he's
didn't get
in Florida.
Him, so, you know.
Come on.
He doesn't get any props for that.
No props. All right, hey, listen, we got a great show laid on for you. No guests today intentionally because there's so much content to cover. In fact, I've got a triple dipper, but I may wind up making it a quadruple dipper because there's been breaking news like just before the show, after I had already prepped it. And we also, though, by the way, have at 3:30 today, JP on sports, who stayed up to the wee hours watching the Penn State-Notre Dame game. But yeah, we got all kinds of stuff laid on for you. JP on sports at 3:30, triple dipper, hit it, man.
The triple dipper, three stories you've got to know.
That's right, the Triple Dipper, three stories, three themes, if you will, that you got to know as we run today's show. First out the gate, planned anyway, is lessons learned. I didn't get to it yesterday, but have you heard what happened with Meta? You know, the parent company of Instagram, Facebook, WhatsApp. They just went through a complete sea change. In fact, we're also hearing they're shutting down their DEI staff. It's like, what is happening at Meta? So I'm going to give you all the notions about whether or not they have actually gone through some lessons learned and learned their lesson. That's number one on the Triple Dipper. Number two, yeah, the U-Haul report is out. I love this. For the last 2 years, I have done the U-Haul report. I'm going to tell you which state, you may already guess it, which state has had the biggest exodus of one-way U-Haul trailers, which is a clear indication of who's losing population. At the same time, who's gaining? And where's Alabama and Tennessee and all that? We'll talk about it. Number two on the Triple Dipper, the woke exodus. And then number three, follow the money. Listen, there's some crazy jackassery when it comes to spending money. But some of what we've seen in California, some of what we're seeing in the throwings, you know, the flailing last days of the Biden administration, just follow the money. You can tell where the agenda is. It's still there. That's the Triple Dipper. All right, well, let me move over to the Right Side Way opening monologue. I'll remind you guys that every single day, the opening monologue, the Right Side Way, brought to you by attorney Stan McDonald, partner at the law firm of Wilmer and Lee in Huntsville, and I'll tell you more about him in just a minute. So, like many of you, I woke up this morning to a view that we don't often get around here. Snow was falling, quickly accumulating across the back deck and covering the yard. I put a great picture on my Twitter feed. You can see it at @SinPhilWilliams. As the sun came up, I looked across the water in the big slough behind our house. I could see the trees covered in wintry white and the ground with that strange kind of blanket that makes everything old look new. So maybe I got a bit wistful this morning or something. I don't know. Something about the snow just kind of kicked in a mellow vibe and got me to thinking about things that don't seem that good, suddenly seeming like they're a bit newer. Call it the snow effect. I mean, whatever it is, I like it. I was reminded of something, too, in that mood that I was in that my first boss out of college said one time. It was a lesson I learned from her that has stuck with me for almost 40 years. You see, I'm a perfectionist. I like things to be in the right order, in the right place, at the right time, for the right reasons. I mean, I'm not OCD like that. I just want things to be done well. But sometimes the quest for the perfect can outweigh the view of the good, if you know what I mean. The quest for the perfect would look at that beautiful snowfall and decide, oh man, I wish I'd covered the plants better. Or look at that beautiful snowfall and say, I wish I'd mowed the grass one more time before it got covered up. Any number of things that help you lose sight of the goodness in the moment. Well, back to my first boss. When I got out of college, my first job involved working for a treatment center with adolescents. I had a great boss. Keep in mind, my beautiful wife of 38 years is Charlene. Well, my first boss was also named Charlene. In fact, when I went home and told my wife about that, the name thing, her remark was, "Oh, good, now you have two bosses named Charlene." Anyway, in one of those moments that has stuck with me forever, my boss was going over something with the staff in our department one day, and we were talking through some project that was tough to accomplish, and she said something I've never forgotten. She said, "Perfection and excellence are not the same thing." Did you catch that? Perfection and excellence are not the same thing. I mean, that point has stuck with me all of my adult years. And the crux of her statement is, we may initiate a plan at times, and it may not hit the mark that we planned on, or it might shift in its timing. In other words, it may not be perfect down to the smallest detail, but the question is, did we pursue it with excellence? Did we go at it in such a way that we left nothing on the table? Did we recognize, as the Navy SEALs say, that the only easy day is yesterday, and our goal today is to give everything we've got to the mission? No half measures, no lack of effort, perfection versus excellence. It's a healthy perspective. It doesn't mean you're not detail-oriented, like me. I know I'm detail-oriented. It doesn't mean that you're somehow satisfied with mediocrity, and certainly doesn't mean that you're okay with losing. Not that at all. None of that. What it does mean, though, is you will pursue and pursue and pursue some more, and that your goal may be a perfect result, but your standard of achievement is actually excellence in all that you do. And sometimes when we press down and reach for excellence, we remember that too often the quest for perfection makes us blind to what is good. Did you catch that? The quest for perfection, that blinding, striving, never satisfied, always grumbling quest of everything being perfect all the time, can make us absolutely unable to see the goodness of the Lord while we are here in the land of the living. It reminds me of what that sage of sitcom wisdom once said. You know, that grand, wise old man who gave us life lessons on TV every week for years? I'm talking about Sheriff Andy Taylor. There was one episode of the Andy Griffith Show that is still heralded as one of the best episodes ever written. It didn't just entertain people, it blessed people. TV Guide ranked it as one of the top 100 TV episodes of all time. It originally aired back in 1963 as the first episode of season 4, and the title of it is Opie the Birdman. It's a tale about seeing the good, about doing something with excellence, about taking ownership of something and not allowing your circumstances to define you. It's about perfection versus excellence. So in the episode, Barney made an old-fashioned slingshot for Opie. Of course, Barney immediately shot out a window trying to show him how to use it, but then Opie thought it was great. Playing outside, Opie was shooting at targets and with his new toy, and seeing something in the tree in his front yard, he took aim and he shot and he killed a bird, and the bird fell to the ground right in front of him. And Opie was torn up. He first refused to believe that he had killed the bird. He pleaded for it to fly. When he realized what he had done, he ran to his room crying his eyes out. So later on, his dad, Sheriff Taylor, found the dead bird, and the guilt-ridden Opie confessed what he had done with his slingshot. He said he was sorry. But Andy told him that being sorry ain't enough. He walked over and opened up Opie's bedroom window so he could hear the baby birds in their nest calling for their mama bird that Opie had killed. Well, Opie decided he was going to raise those baby birds. So he put them in a cage, and he fed them every day, and he gave all three of them names. But Andy reminded them that they were wild birds at heart, and that one day they'd have to be let go. And that day finally came. Andy stood there with Opie in the yard as he talked to the birds he had raised. He wanted to keep them. His idea of perfect was to have them in the cage. But the better plan was to let them go. So Opie opened the cage door, and they flew out. And in what has to be one of the best lines ever written for any show, Opie looked down at the cage and he said, "That little cage sure did look empty." But Andy just smiled at it and looked up and said, "Yeah, but don't the trees seem nice and full?" I love that line. It was spot on. And I know that in my own life, I tend to too often see the empty cage instead of the full trees. My quest for the perfect can outweigh my appreciation for the good. Sometimes if you get down to it, the good really is the perfect. But this monologue today is not meant to be one that just pats you on the head, tells you to sleep it off, maybe you'll feel better tomorrow. This is the one that tells you shake it off and get back in the game. If you're out there demanding perfection but you're losing sight of the good, put your mind back in order. I believe that 2025 is fresh. It ain't perfect, but it's like snow on the ground. It creates a freshness, a vibrance, a clarity that wasn't there before. Are you content with where we are now? I'm most certainly not, but yet I am so appreciative. like down in my core appreciative. I'm thankful, the more I think about it, that we have a new day in front of us with new leadership and new opportunities. And we're going to do something with it, I'm telling you. And it won't always be perfect, but Lord, it's so good. This is bigger than us, too. I can look at my children and my grandchildren. I can know with great clarity that I want more for them. I can look at the legacy left for me by my parents and grandparents, and I know that I don't want to see it squandered. I can look at the vast resources, the history, the tone, and the tenor of what this nation has meant to the greater expanse of the world. But then I realize it's not just about the big stuff. Sometimes it's the small things. That as I quest for the perfect, that I too often overlook the good, things that I'm actually grateful for. Like smelling the fresh-cut grass on a Saturday morning. Or the sound of singing in church on Sunday. Or the well-worn feeling of my office chair where gainful work gets done. Or the memories of my time in the military service. Or the thanks of my clients who were appreciative of getting help. Or Christmas gatherings with my grown-up kids and my grandkids. Or the joy of sitting out on the deck in the cool of a southern evening having a glass of wine with my sweet wife. And I know that all of it is worth staying in the game for. And none of it's perfect. But Lord, it's so good. So yeah, perfection is not always an option. But shake it off, like right now. Perfection and excellence are two different things, and we have some excellent things in front of us, and we're putting excellence into the work that we do. Work within the constraints of your current environment. Work within your sphere of influence. Reach out and stretch your wings a bit. Shake the dust off your talking points. Put on the full armor. And remember that God has not given us a spirit of fear, but one of power and love and self-discipline, and he promises us a peace that surpasses all understanding. It's the good. Perfection versus excellence. They are not the same thing. One is a goal, an aspiration, and the other, excellence, is a way of life. It's how we should always strive to pursue our callings with excellence. And if we do that, we will see the good. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. Yeah, I don't know, maybe the snow this morning, maybe the fact that I got to have a slower start to my day, I don't know, but I just felt a little bit philosophical today. Something about having the snow on the ground making everything look fresh. But y'all, I'm serious when I say, I believe 2025 is already fresh. It's going to be a different year, a better year. It's going to be a good year. It's going to be an excellent year. Let's get her done. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. Yeah, we're live. Snowmageddon didn't stop us from getting in the studio, by golly. Here we are, just braving the frozen tundra, just crossing the windswept plains, trudging uphill through 4 feet of snow to get to the studio.
I did a very satisfying thing today.
What was that?
And I took a video of it. I don't get to do this often. I got to do the whole windshield wipe of all the snow off my windshield all at once. It was satisfying.
I saw your windshield. What's left on it is pretty epic.
It is.
Yeah.
I was like, I kind of want this to stay on as I drive. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
It did, but yeah. People were building snowmen in my apartment complex too.
I passed two full-size snowmen, like they were 4 feet tall, in yards near my house. And I thought, wow. I mean, now granted, I can still see like the tips of the grass blades poking up in some places through the grass. You know,
yeah.
It's like, okay, we could have gotten more. Like, I'm confused. Call meteorology, brother. Why is it less than 32 degrees outside, but it's raining wet? Why is that happening?
Well, he would tell you it's not cold enough up in the clouds.
That's such crap.
But I think we got the perfect amount that still looks pretty, though. You know, the golf course at the window looks very
pretty. We do have quite the view. So, yes, the Right Side Studios overlook the Country Club golf course. And, yeah, I mean, like right now, it is gorgeous out there.
Don't think we'll be seeing people playing golf today.
Probably not today. Lose the ball.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Unless you got a neon.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, play with the neons. Have one with a little low jack, a beeper on it.
Yeah.
Hey, let me real quick go back. The monologue you just heard a moment ago, the Right Side Way monologue. Got to tell you, as always, attorney Stan McDonald is the sponsor of our Right Side Way monologue every single day. So, yeah, attorney Stan McDonald, partner at the law firm of Wilmer & Lee. I know him personally. I think the world of him. And he's a 30-year veteran in the practice of law here in North Alabama. And listen, He is not only going to advocate and fight for your legal needs, but Stan's the kind of guy who has been in the mix as an absolute warrior on the things that Right Side Ruffians care about for decades. I mean, like, he's been in the mix. Attorney Stan McDonald, he has represented his clients also in thousands of real estate transactions. He can represent you ably in every level of court, local, state, and federal. And I like to say, when Stan McDonald's on your side, you have no greater friend, and your adversaries will have no greater foe. So let me tell you how to reach him, all right? I'm going to give you his number here in a moment. Attorney Stan McDonald, partner at the law firm of Wilmer and Lee. He's an America First family man, a sponsor of Right Side Way. And here's his phone number. You ready? Stan McDonald, 256-479-3020. That's Stan McDonald, 256-479-3020. And tell him you heard about it on Right Side Radio. And here's that ridiculous thing I got to do. You ready? No representation made the quality legal service before is greater than the quality legal service before the lawyers. Although I think Stan McDonald's pretty cool. How about that?
You just did away with that whole thing.
Oh, no, I didn't. No. No representation made the quality of legal services by Stan McDonald's better than anybody else's, although I think he's really cool and he sponsors the Right Side Way. And how do you like that?
Yeah.
Okay. Never mind. We're not going to talk about it again. We talk about it every day. Hey, text lines are open. 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. We're live on radio and streaming online. We've got a bunch of you guys watching online right now. Thank you for that. You can catch us on YouTube. You can catch us on our website, rightsidemedia.org. You can catch us at two different places on X, Twitter, Rumble, Twitch. Rumble was giving you some back talk a while ago.
Rumble is having issues today for some reason. So yeah.
It's Rumble per se.
Yeah. So if any of y'all are struggling to watch it on Rumble, that is why. But we're on Twitter, like you said. We are also on YouTube and our website and Twitch. So you can check, you know, no shortage of places to check us out.
Did Rumble get caught in Snowmageddon?
Probably. Yeah.
Okay.
Probably.
Then again, are they based out there in the California fires?
Oh, that's a good point. I don't know.
I don't know where Rumble's based.
But yeah, they're having issues today. But check us out on other places.
There shouldn't be any tech companies left in California right now.
No.
Every one of them. Just come on down. In fact, I'm going to give you a little bit heads up later on the best states to move to. What do you think of that? Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation, covered in snow. We're talking about this show goes from, like, whoo, way up top of Huntsville down to Birmingham, from Tuscaloosa back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. And Monday. Monday, we start going live in Chattanooga, Tennessee. We look forward to joining WGOW 1150 AM out of Chattanooga live every day. So Right Side Ruffians in East Tennessee, Northwest Georgia, and that corner of Northeast Alabama that we can't quite get to right now is about to be covered. So we're looking forward to adopting a whole bunch of more ruffians and bringing them into the fold. So anyway, tell your folks, if you have anybody in those regions, listen to us every day live. WGOW out of Chattanooga. I got some text messages because you guys are already some texting machines. David from Bucky's, he sent me pictures. He said it was snowing at 5:30 this morning, and we ended up close to 4 inches. Yes, he did. Boy, he's got the ruler in the ground and everything. Let me see his pictures. Yep, got that back deck just covered up. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. That's a big backyard, too. Wow. Thank you, David. Dave from Madison says, the lovely Karen playing in the snow. Yeah. And by the way, she's got a snowball, so watch out. That's great. We got several folks, and I see you've got a response you already did on that guy out in California. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. Wow. John from Huntsville, Phil, spectacular monologue. Also, I got 5 inches of snow, so my prediction of 10 inches is a little off, but there could be some more snow later tonight. And then it says, by the way, JP, I told you Notre Dame was going to beat Penn State.
I my dad called me before the game, asked me what I thought. I said, I think Notre Dame's going to win by 3 points. I swear on everything I said that. And I texted him after. I said, what did I tell you? Yeah.
See, it's your dad. So if we call him and ask, he's going to get your back. So, I mean, yeah. Do we go? Yes. Okay. We'll trust you on this. John also sent me a picture. Part of his junkyard area covered up in snow, man. I mean, it's like everywhere. Brian from Huntsville says, happy 2025 in the snow, sends me a picture.
That's a great picture.
That's very cool. Of a Trump 2025 bill. I haven't seen that. Where do you get those?
Is that valid currency?
I don't think so. If it is, I want to know how to get my hands on it. JT Lacey Springs says, the good thing about snow in the South, we all have to slow down. He said the three birds, Lincoln, Blinken, and Nod. Yeah, he's talking about that was on Andy Griffith. He actually named them Winkin', Blinken, and Nod. He said, I've heard twice, you've missed the jackassery sound. Glad y'all are live today, unlike Dale, who works from his basement.
Yeah, Dale doesn't get props for being live because he didn't have to go anywhere.
Well, you know, what do you do? somebody had to go out the studio, though, and push buttons for him.
Yep. Who did that? One of the producers. As someone who did that for about 7 months for him, that's how it goes. You know, you get up there, get up early, and do all the work, and then he rolls out of his bed about 3 minutes before we go live, you know, ready to go.
Just wrong on so many levels.
But hey, he's earned the ability to do that. So props to him.
I spec he's been in the business long enough.
Yeah.
TL from Huntsville says, another timely monologue, Phil. English sculptor Andy Goldsworthy said, snow provokes responses that reach right back to childhood. Wow. That is very cool. Thank you, TL. And I like that. All right. So listen, keep texting, keep calling 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. So I gotta talk about something that happened today that is not part of my Dipper plan. You may have seen it, but Donald Trump was required to go through the sentencing process for the Alvin Bragg case. Isn't that crazy how we have to name them by the prosecutor? But that's what it was. This was, I guess technically it's the Stormy Daniels alleged fraud case. And let's remember what this case was about. Under the New York state law, and by the way, this is a New York state case, not a federal case, but a New York state case. Under the New York state law, falsification of a business record can be considered a misdemeanor. But in every case, there typically has to be some form of proximate causation of damages. And under the law, that basically means is the damages that occurred were proximately caused by the actions of the individual who committed them. So what they had to do was they had to take a business record, which was Trump's accounting records, showed that he had a payment for legal services to that attorney, Michael Cohen, that he no longer has. Michael Cohen has since been disbarred, has gone to prison. Michael Cohen is a discredited individual, but he was at one point one of the many lawyers who Trump had on retainer, and Trump's accountants entered into the ledgers payment made for legal services. At the same time, we're finding out that Stormy Daniels, the former porn star, there's a great source of credibility. The porn star says, you know, Donald Trump, he tried to have his way with me. And everybody's like, what? And so Donald Trump's organization decided they didn't want that out there. He says it wasn't true. I take him at his word, says it wasn't true. What he wants, though, is what happens all the time is when somebody is trying to extort money from the rich guy, they pay him some shut-up money. It's hush money. So this was technically a hush money trial. Did you pay hush money? People do that all the time. It's called settling a potential claim. As an attorney, I can just tell you, I have settled any number of claims. I recently settled another one for a client. That one was already in litigation, and we settled the claim. And guess what? When you settle the claim, you sign a contract called a settlement agreement. It's a binding agreement. It's a source of contract that you can sue them for breaching. Stormy Daniels breached the contract anyway and went public with the information that she had taken a good deal of money to say she would never talk about. So she breached the contract, and oh, by the way, Trump sued her for it. Trump got a judgment against Stormy Daniels. Let this sink in. What we're talking about in the Alvin Bragg case is a porn star being paid by a now disbarred lawyer for something in the ledger that wasn't directly written to be allegedly for Stormy Daniels, but since that lawyer is the one who gave her the check, they're saying money is fungible. It had to have come from Trump for that reason, and yet Trump's records didn't say Stormy Daniels. Trump's records said legal services. So freaking what? My law firm has money in trust for clients all the time. And when they say pay that bill or do that thing, we do, unless it's something that's unethical or illegal. We hold money for real estate transactions, and then we see them paid when the time comes, whatever the case may be. So Trump sends his monthly retainers 34 times to the office of Michael Cohen. And that's what this was. Every single check that was attributed to legal services from Michael Cohen was considered to be a crime under New York law by Alvin Bragg. But it's a misdemeanor, isn't it? Yes. So what did they do? They went back and said, you know, that was around the time he was running for president. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe this was done to keep his name clean so he could run for office. That's what it was. So, oh, I know what. We'll take the little bitty misdemeanor that doesn't have anything more than a slap on the wrist potential for punishment, and we'll tie it to a federal election campaign finance issue and claim that he falsified his records and it should have been a reportable issue on his campaign. What? Yes, that's what this was. In case you never understood the threads that tied this thing together, that's it. No one has ever been tried for this crime before. I still don't know how in the world they were allowed to take a state misdemeanor, craft a connection to a federal election law issue, and create a so-called felony for which the then state prosecutor was allowed to conduct a trial and claim that there were 34 separate felonies when what you really had was 34 checks that were written for legal services. It's the most ungodly thing I've ever seen. So this thing rocked on. The world was so excited. The liberal world, the pundits, they were ecstatic. Oh, we've got him now. He's going to be a felon. He won't be able to run for office because he'll be a felon. Well, you know, I guess if you're going to go ahead and create things out of whole cloth and create crimes that are not really crimes by wireworking things together, who is safe at that point? Who is safe? I mean, this is an alleged accounting issue. Trump didn't write the checks. His accountants did. Trump didn't create the ledgers. His accountants did. Trump just wanted Stormy Daniels to quit lying about him. Doesn't everybody? Trump had an agreement with her. He had to sue her. And he won. And yet she was allowed to testify against him, and that did not seem to be impeachable? And Trump's, you know, star witnesses were not allowed to testify? Why? And Michael Cohen was allowed to get out of jail and come out there as a disbarred former lawyer, and they weren't allowed to introduce all the evidence about who he is, and he got to testify? Really? And any number of times there would be an objection that would be overruled on the Trump side, but yet the same objection, if it came up, was sustained on the prosecution side. There is so much reversible error in this case. And then, oh, by the way, we find out that the Supreme Court says, much of what you're looking at here in terms of evidentiary matters that occurred once he was president, those are considered inadmissible because he is allowed to have presidential immunity, but they let it be introduced anyway, more reversible error. In a trial that took 5 weeks, think about this. You have a trial of something that no one can figure out how it even got to the point of trial. It took 5 weeks to conduct that trial. What do you say for every day for 5 weeks? You got a jury that can't get their lives back because they're 5 weeks in the courthouse. You got Trump supposed to be campaigning for office. 5 weeks of trial. On charges never tried before, reversible error evident every day, 2 years of assassination of his character and the bloviating of Trump derangement syndrome pundits, millions of taxpayer dollars spent on all of this. And the sentencing was today because the Supreme Court of the United States declined to say the sentencing should be postponed. Great. Thanks, Justice Roberts, once again for joining with the liberals on the court. So the Supreme Court did not choose to intervene, and Trump had to sit through the sentencing today. I listened to the entire audio from the courtroom, and it was something else. Prosecution opened its comments and spent all their time talking about how mean Trump had been talking about them as opposed to what the crimes allegedly were. I guess they were trying to build the case that he has no remorse for his crimes. No, he doesn't have remorse for crimes he doesn't believe he committed. And then Trump's lawyer spoke, did an eloquent job. And then the judge actually allowed Donald Trump to speak himself. And that was probably the best part. And then the judge sentenced him. If you haven't heard the outcome of this, I'm going to give you a perspective on this that I don't think I've heard anybody else say. We're going to take a break right now. I'm going to come back and tell you what just happened in the sentencing and how we should perceive this. Because as much as we've never seen this kind of a trial before, I've never even heard of this kind of a sentence before. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. So I gotta talk about something that happened today that is not part of my Dipper plan. You may have seen it, but Donald Trump was required to go through the sentencing process for the Alvin Bragg case. Isn't that crazy how we have to name them by the prosecutor? But that's what it was. This was, I guess technically it's the Stormy Daniels alleged fraud case. And let's remember what this case was about. Under the New York state law, and by the way, this was a New York state case, not a federal case, but a New York state case. Under the New York state law, falsification of a business record can be considered a misdemeanor. But in every case, there typically has to be some form of proximate causation of damages. And under the law, that basically means is the damages that occurred were proximately caused by the actions of the individual who committed them. So what they had to do was they had to take a business record, which was Trump's accounting records, showed that he had a payment for legal services to that attorney, Michael Cohen, that he no longer has. Michael Cohen has since been disbarred, has gone to prison. Michael Cohen is a discredited individual, but he was at one point one of the many lawyers who Trump had on retainer, and Trump's accountants entered into the ledgers payment made for legal services. At the same time, we're finding out that Stormy Daniels, the former porn star, there's a great source of credibility. The porn star says, you know, Donald Trump, he tried to have his way with me, And everybody's like, what? And so Donald Trump's organization decided they didn't want that out there. He says it wasn't true. I take him at his word, says it wasn't true. What he wants, though, is what happens all the time, is when somebody is trying to extort money from the rich guy, they pay him some shut-up money. It's hush money. So this was technically a hush money trial. Did you pay hush money? People do that all the time. It's called settling a potential claim. As an attorney, I can just tell you, I have settled any number of claims. I recently settled another one for a client. That one was already in litigation, and we settled the claim. And guess what? When you settle the claim, you sign a contract called a settlement agreement. It's a binding agreement. It's a source of contract that you can sue them for breaching. Stormy Daniels breached the contract anyway and went public with the information that she had taken a good deal of money to say she would never talk about. So she breached the contract, and oh, by the way, Trump sued her for it. Trump got a judgment against Stormy Daniels. Let this sink in. What we're talking about in the Alvin Bragg case is a porn star being paid by a now disbarred lawyer for something in the ledger that wasn't directly written to be allegedly for Stormy Daniels, but since that lawyer is the one who gave her the check, they're saying money is fungible. It had to have come from Trump for that reason, and yet Trump's records didn't say Stormy Daniels. Trump's records said services. So freaking what? My law firm has money in trust for clients all the time. And when they say pay that bill or do that thing, we do, unless it's something that's unethical or illegal. We hold money for real estate transactions, and then we see them paid when the time comes, whatever the case may be. So Trump sends his monthly retainers 34 times to the office of Michael Cohen. And that's what this was. Every single check that was attributed to legal services from Michael Cohen was considered to be a crime under New York law by Alvin Bragg. But it's a misdemeanor, isn't it? Yes. So what did they do? They went back and said, you know, that was around the time he was running for president. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe this was done to keep his name clean so he could run for office. That's what it was. So, oh, I know what. We'll take the little bitty misdemeanor that doesn't have anything more than a slap on the wrist potential for punishment, and we'll tie it to a federal election campaign finance issue and claim that he falsified his records and it should have been a reportable issue on his campaign. What? Yes, that's what this was. In case you never understood the threads that tied this thing together, that's it. No one has ever been tried for this crime before. I still don't know how in the world they were allowed to take a state misdemeanor, craft a connection to a federal election law issue, and create a so-called felony for which the then state prosecutor was allowed to conduct a trial and claim that there were 34 separate felonies when what you really had was 34 checks that were written for legal services. It's the most ungodly thing I've ever seen. So this thing rocked on. The world was so excited. The liberal world, the pundits, they were ecstatic. Oh, we've got him now. He's going to be a felon. He won't be able to run for office because he'll be a felon. Well, you know, I guess if you're going to go ahead and create things out of whole cloth and create crimes that are not really crimes by wireworking things together, who is safe at that point? Who is safe? I mean, this is an alleged accounting issue. Trump didn't write the checks. His accountants did. Trump didn't create the ledgers. His accountants did. Trump just wanted Stormy Daniels to quit lying about him. Doesn't everybody? Trump had an agreement with her. He had to sue her. And he won. And yet she was allowed to testify against him, and that did not seem to be impeachable. And Trump's, you know, star witnesses were not allowed to testify. Why? And Michael Cohen was allowed to get out of jail and come out there as a disbarred former lawyer, and they weren't allowed to introduce all the evidence about who he is, and he got to testify? Really? And any number of times there would be an objection that would be overruled on the Trump side, but yet the same objection, if it came up, was sustained on the prosecution side. There is so much reversible error in this case. And then, oh, by the way, we find out that the Supreme Court says much of what you're looking at here in terms of evidentiary matters that occurred once he was president, those are considered inadmissible because he is allowed to have presidential immunity, but they let it be introduced anyway. More reversible error. In a trial that took 5 weeks, think about this. You have a trial of something that no one can figure out how it even got to the point of trial. It took 5 weeks to conduct that trial. What do you say for every day for 5 weeks? You got a jury that can't get their lives back because they're 5 weeks in the courthouse. You got Trump supposed to be campaigning for office. 5 weeks of trial. On charges never tried before, reversible error evident every day, 2 years of assassination of his character and the bloviating of Trump derangement syndrome pundits, millions of taxpayer dollars spent on all of this, and the sentencing was today. Because the Supreme Court of the United States declined to say this sentencing should be postponed. Great. Thanks, Justice Roberts, once again for joining with the liberals on the court. So the Supreme Court did not choose to intervene, and Trump had to sit through the sentencing today. I listened to the entire audio from the courtroom, and it was something else. Prosecution opened its comments and spent all their time talking about how mean Trump had been talking about them as opposed to what the crimes allegedly were. I guess they were trying to build the case that he has no remorse for his crimes. No, he doesn't have remorse for crimes he doesn't believe he committed. And then Trump's lawyer spoke, did an eloquent job. And then the judge actually allowed Donald Trump to speak himself. And that was probably the best part. And then the judge sentenced him. If you haven't heard the outcome of this, I'm going to give you a perspective on this that I don't think I've heard anybody else say. We're going to take a break right now. I'm going to come back and tell you what just happened in the sentencing and how we should perceive this. because as much as we've never seen this kind of a trial before, I've never even heard of this kind of a sentence before. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. So text lines are open, 833-687-4448. Give me your thoughts on the Trump sentencing, but let me tell you what happened. So I gave you the full lay of the land a minute ago, right? All the ways by which this case, it made no sense. And of course, I'm an outsider looking in. And I do practice law, but I don't practice criminal law. And that's just my choice. I choose not to practice criminal law. But I look at this case and I think I know enough to know when I see jackassery. And this has been a level of jackassery in the legal sense that I have never seen before. I mean, there's Fannie Willis, there's Jack Smith, there's all the other things going on. But this Alvin Bragg case, when you have to create the law out of thin air to be able to prosecute somebody under it, that just doesn't resonate with the idea of justice. In fact, if you're not familiar, there were multiple other potential prosecutors who heard about this, who reviewed the opportunity to review it, to prosecute it, and chose not to because they recognized it was so thin it was anorexic. I mean, it is that bad. So today, after all that was said and done, the judge allowed Trump to have comments. And in fine Trump fashion, he went there. He said, this has been a travesty of justice. It's been incredibly painful to have to live through. He pointed out that that everything I just said, he kind of repeated on his own. He also talked about the fact that this has been something that will be a stain on the justice system, and it's a blight on New York. And then when he finished his statements, he actually said thank you. I mean, he was very respectful, very cordial. He didn't bloviate. He didn't yell. He didn't call names. He just said, "And here's the deal, and here's how I feel. And this is wrong, and we're going to appeal it." And then the judge did the sentencing. Now, the sentencing, now what happens now? So Trump has not been a convicted felon until now. Technically, you're not convicted until sentencing has concluded. And that's pretty much the law in any jurisdiction. The sentencing came down, and he got what is known as an unconditional discharge. So with a trial that took 5 weeks and a year of negative press and all the claims about he's a felon, he can't even run for president, and all the asinine things that he's had to live through because of this, and the reversible error every day in trial, and the millions of taxpayer dollars spent to prosecute this thing. No prison. No probation, no fines, and no conditions. The only thing he got was a scarlet letter of being now branded a felon. What basically happened was they had the whole trial and said, you're convicted, go on your way. That's what happened. Look, there's an old axiom that says that punishment should fit the crime. But if that holds true, then I would say, and here's the thing that I've heard nobody else say yet. If it holds true that punishment should fit the crime, then the American public ought to ask themselves now, if there's no punishment, was there ever really a crime? Is the judge really going to say, after everything that just happened, yeah, we did all that, and, okay, no punishment, just, and the judge actually said, Godspeed to you. That's how it ended. Trump made comments, by the way, direct to the judge at one point saying, America watched this trial, and I still won the election. In other words, we can see through this. And I wrote on my Twitter feed, I said, so yeah, the left, they got their man, but so did the right. We got our man. We did. We got him elected anyway. No prison, no probation, no fines, no conditions, unconditional discharge. But he's a felon. What? That's where we sit.
I was confused as to how you can give an unconditional discharge without dropping the charges. It's like, you're still guilty, but you have no punishment.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, what's the point?
Exactly. And this apparently, the judge even said, there is case law precedent that says that the legislature of the state of New York has deemed this to be a suitable sentencing for a crime in the discretion of the court. And so, yes, the judge, he's convicted, which goes on his record, and he now has to appeal it to get it off his record.
It's just, obviously you can't put Trump in jail. He's about to be president. But it's like, It just points to the fact that this was just a trial to try to get him to lose the election.
Yeah,
and you're not going to bring any punishment.
No, and you want to talk about another piece of cowardice? Nobody's heard from Alvin Bragg. Where is he right now? Sitting in the back room right now, wiping his eyes and wishing he'd ever kept Trump out of office? Probably. We got more on this. Text it. Call it. 833-687-4448. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two on a snow-covered Friday. And what do we know about the forecast for this evening there, JP, in our listening area? What's meteorology brother say?
I actually have not heard from him on anything for tonight, but according to the weather app, it's supposed to, at least down here, the snow is supposed to go till 7. So if that's the same line in Huntsville, I assume Huntsville is probably going to stop a little earlier. So probably until around the show ends.
So we're
going
to have like snow and freezing rain off and on throughout the evening? What about overnight? Any more tomorrow?
No, it's supposed to end, according to the weather app on my phone. It says at least here it's supposed to end at 7. So.
Okay. All right.
One day, snowmageddon.
One day, snowmageddon. I actually was a little concerned about my driveway this morning. I have a steep driveway.
Yeah, you do.
I do. And I was looking at it, and this morning it was frozen. Like there was ice. But, you know, by the time I left to come to the studio a little later than normal, obviously, it was like the slush.
Yeah,
so.
That's pretty much what my parking lot was in my apartment, just slush. I took it real nice and slow today, the two-minute drive to the studio.
You do live rather close. All right, hey, listen, text lines, a few of y'all. Kevin from Hartzell says, snow cleansing the new year with a new president. Yes, snow cleansing. That's where we are, snow cleansing. John from Huntsville checked in again, said, I want to send you a picture of some deer playing in the snow, eating tortillas off the ground. Okay. Random, but thank you, John. I appreciate it. He's feeding them tortillas, I guess, slinging tortillas out in the backyard. That's got some pretty good deer. You should not go hungry if things go bad. Chris from Gadsden checking in, saying, Phil, on the Trump sentencing in New York, welcome to the world of criminal defense law. Yeah. I don't want it, man. You can keep it. John from Harvest says, Trump is right. This was a travesty of justice. It was a crime without a criminal act and a sentence without a punishment. Isn't that amazing? That's a great phrase. A sentence without a punishment. After all he's... And I don't want him to have a punishment. Let's put it... let's be clear. But the American taxpayers have to look at this and go, so if that's all there is, then why did we do all this?
The whole time of whining about how he's a convicted felon. Yeah. And then you're... He's, you know, you're not going to give him a punishment.
So what you really wanted was the title of felon. You didn't want him to be punished for his crimes.
Yep.
Okay. It's just unbelievable. Brian from Huntsville says, shouldn't Stormy Daniels have the scarlet letter? Yeah. Yeah, she should, and she does. Mike from Florence says, the judge took the left's court of public opinion and turned it into a legal decision, where many worried about libel before the sentence from the judge gives them some protection. Yeah, the interesting thing is, too, I think Trump is still under a gag order. That's crazy. But I think he's still under a gag order, and I'm saying that needs to end, and he needs to have the opportunity to talk about whatever he wants to talk about. I'm sure his attorneys will tell him what is defamation and what is not. Like, don't say something, please, sir, that gets you sued. But at this point, he can't do anything without getting sued. Jeff from Indiana says, well, Phil, I started towards your direction. I got about halfway through Kentucky, and they called me back to the yard because they couldn't get those Alabama boys to drive in the snow. Well, you got lucky, brother. I mean, he sends us pictures of him smiling in the snow next to his truck. That's great. Well, you know what? Good for you, man. Enjoy your weekend, and I hope it winds up being a blessing. But, yeah, so apparently Alabama boys didn't want to have a truck in the yard for him to connect to, so – too bad for your luck, I guess. And then last one before I go to the next dipper, JT Lacey Springs, is Trump's conviction glass breaking, so to speak? You know, I would think so. There you go. That's what it is. The left broke another glass ceiling by creating something out of thin air to convict a past and future president of the United States on a felony. 34 felonies with no punishment.
The first court to hand a felony to a former president and then give him no sentence, no punishment.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Like, yeah. Awesome. What a great waste of what they call judicial economy. All right, let's change gears. Let's talk about something. That was like a dipper unto itself. You know, we're it's 3:10, and I have not even touched the actual dippers that were planned for the day.
Could be a quad dipper day.
It could be a quad dipper.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it could. A quad dipper day. All right, so let's go to dipper number one, actually. Lessons learned. If you have not heard, Zuckerberg is making waves. Now, did you listen to the Joe Rogan podcast this morning?
No, it came out earlier this morning. I've heard many clips of like sound bites, but I've not heard it in its entirety. No.
Well, I saw something up on one of the screens here in the studio a moment ago. It appears that Zuckerberg is actually making waves right now. Like he's mm-hmm. he's naming names, so to speak.
Yeah, and
got receipts.
He's backtracking on a lot of stuff, which is good.
Well, so okay, I'm going to come back to that on what things you heard, but let me lay the foundation here. So, anybody who remembers anything over the last few years remembers what it was like to be a conservative and have the conservative messaging points just completely suppressed. I've said before on this show that the public square, the modern public square, is social media. There's a lot of discussion out there about whether or not there should be anybody's, like whether Facebook or X, formerly Twitter, Instagram, whether they should be allowed to say you can't say that because that's censorship. But yeah, but Phil, it's privately owned. It is, except that it's privately owned and it's way beyond anything nothing like it before. It is the new public square. I want to say there was a stat that I read that something like 70% of Americans get their news sourcing off of social media. It's an amazing amount of people, millions and millions and millions and millions of people, hundreds of millions worldwide, get their news from social media. So when you think back to things like the Hunter Biden laptop being suppressed, what that meant was they knew the power of what they had, and they did not want to be a part of changing the narrative. They changed it themselves and made the narrative what they wanted it to be. They also, oh, by the way, did this with COVID. In a big, 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 big way. The COVID vaccine narrative in a big, 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 big way. If you were skeptical, if you had questions, if you didn't want, if you were a vaccine denier, then guess what? You were deplatformed. You lost your accounts.
Shadow banned.
Thank you very much. And it was a thing. What was that? That was censorship. That was the narrative being changed. But Phil, it's a private entity. That really doesn't matter, but especially when you consider the government's involvement in it. Oh, yes. So now we have a different narrative. It was not just the private entity. This would be the equivalent of 100 years ago, the government going to the New York Times and saying, here's a story you're going to write. And here's a narrative we are allowed to use. That's what happened. That's why everything changed when Musk bought Twitter and replatformed it as X. He suddenly opened the door for people to be allowed to say the things that had not been allowed, and now the rest of the world is going, wait, what? There's more? There's a part that I hadn't been told before? How come I wasn't told that? That's a good question. Why weren't you told that? So Mark Zuckerberg came out this week. He came out this week and kind of surprised some people. Meta, which is the parent company of Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp, owned by CEO Mark Zuckerberg, has decided to remove their fact-checking. Really? Yes, that's what they did. I did not understand the fact-checking system until I studied up for the show today. But the fact-checking system is, I'm going to get into that in a minute. But what he's done is they've removed fact-checking. In other words, they've removed their censorships. And now they're allowing just to be like a shift to community notes, which is what X does. Community notes, meaning if someone sees something that's not true, they can label it and say, hey, the real story is. In other words, it allows actual accountability in the open as opposed to in the background.
And it's actual Twitter users, not third-party
correct
biased, you know.
Correct. And Zuckerberg's not, you know, saying that why he did it, except that more came out on the Joe Rogan podcast today, which we'll talk about in a minute. But Zuckerberg's reiterated now that people want to see more politics, and yet that's in the narrative. It's in the past has been, no, people don't want to see more politics. He even testified before Congress And he said, this is what his testimony was, quote, one of the top pieces of feedback we're hearing from our community right now is people don't want politics and fighting to take over their experience on our services. And now he's saying just the opposite. People want to be able to discuss what he calls civic topics, that's politics, and make arguments that are in the mainstream of political discourse. This is his quote. And he said, some people may leave our platform for virtue signaling, but I think the vast majority will find these changes make the products better. So yeah, it's a little confusing, but suddenly there's been a flip-flop, and he's going down the same road that Musk took Twitter, opening it up for people to be able to say what they want to say. And the left is having a come apart. Like, not a little bit. I've got some quotes here when we get back from the break that will just curl your hair about things that the left is saying. The fact checkers, by the way, I'll tell you how the fact checking had been working. And folks, this is funny, and it's yet not funny, because this is censorship. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. Giving you all the truth you can slap on a bumper sticker, pulling pins on truth grenades, dropping truth bomb, all of them. Bulletproof influence, that's where we are. You like that one, don't you?
It's a good one.
It is a good one. Bulletproof influence. All right, so, hey, listen, we're talking about lessons learned. Did Mark Zuckerberg learn a lesson? Did he change because he had learned his lesson? Is that what's happened here? Or was he just losing money and, like, realizing that the prevailing winds said, you know what, you better stop what you're doing because you no longer have the covering of a Biden administration? I don't know. There's a lot to be said for both theories about why he changed what he did, but the left is freaking out. And let me tell you what I found out about the fact-checking. So here's how the fact-checking worked. It was not just internal fact-checkers. I was under the assumption that Facebook had their own staff, and they were just sitting in a room going, we don't like that story, and just ding, which is a lot of what Twitter used to do. You know, Twitter used to have this, like, whole staff full of people that were the Twitter police, and they sat there and they made decisions. Facebook, I thought, had been doing the same thing. And what I find out now is Facebook actually employed third-party fact-checkers, and they had groups like PolitiFact, and gosh, who else? Weekly Standard, and and there's some very biased organizations that were out there being paid big money by Facebook to do the so-called, they were using USA Today as a fact checker. USA Today is a liberal rag. So what we're finding out now is that the gamesmanship that was being played was unparalleled, as the sources that were not unbiased were providing so-called unbiased fact-checking. And then Facebook would go, wow, okay. So there was a situation here. I've got a great piece. If you want to read up on this, The Federalist did a piece on this by Mark Hemingway. It's Molly Hemingway's husband. The Federalist. Mark Hemingway used to work for the Weekly Standard, which is an organization that I think that was Bill Kristol and David French and all these never-Trumpers. And he said he remembers distinctly that they were making money off fact-checking, and it really bothered some of the staff. And then the Weekly Standard fell apart and no longer had any mojo, and so they all went away. And they tried to start up something else in a never-Trump category, and it just didn't fly. But he says this. He gave a great anecdote. He said, basically, there was a time when they had a very detailed staff meeting at the Weekly Standard, and they had one young guy on the staff who said he was very uncomfortable with his fact-checking assignment. And everybody listened to what he had to say, and the staff was kind of shocked. They're all, you know, supposedly got journalistic ethics, and they're hearing this young guy say, I'm really uncomfortable with this, because he said, I just put together a fact check on an article, and I sent it over. And I got to thinking, what if I'm wrong? He said, because basically he was given access to a special portal in the back end of Facebook where he, you know, all the fact-checking mercenaries would check in. And he entered his details about this fact check he'd been given. and he entered a claim of faults about it. And then he was asked to enter the URL for the story that he was fact-checking, at which point Facebook went out and apparently, basically at that point, in his words, killed 80% of the global internet traffic that that story was tied to. In other words, Facebook crushed a story based upon one young 20-something-year-old's decision that that appears to be false. He said the whole staff sat back and went, holy crap, because it suddenly occurred to them a single journalist has the power to render judgment to wipe a news story off the internet. Well, the discussion went on until the boss raged at everybody making money off this. And he didn't want it to go away. So yeah, there was conflict of interest. Yeah, there was money changing hands. And yeah, the fact-checking, the program, it was basically designed in many ways to suppress the conservative view of whatever was going on at the time. It's a great piece on the Federalist. I encourage you to read it 2 days ago. It's called Facebook Has Admitted Its Error, But the Fact Checks Are Still Complicit. Mark Hemingway. Here's the thing. This whole shift, you look at it now and go, wait, hang on a second. Are you serious about this? Because I've got a piece from the New York Post. It's only a little over a month old, maybe 6 weeks. November 29th, gunmaker Smith & Wesson was deplatformed by Facebook. Smith & Wesson, deplatformed by Facebook. Now, Facebook came back later and go, oh, sorry, and they put their platform, they put their account back on. But Smith & Wesson has been on for 15 years. And suddenly, they found the ever-changing guidelines about firearms on Facebook, putting them in a position where their entire account got deplatformed despite their massive following. Well, the commerce policies from Facebook prohibited the buying, the selling, the transactional efforts of gun manufacturers and gun sellers. But what you have is just 6 weeks ago, you've got censorship of the narrative. You've got the public square being used to put the liberal thrust into whatever the storylines are. You got the deplatforming of Smith & Wesson. And yet, suddenly, we have the epiphany. And Mark Zuckerberg has seen the light. Has he learned his lesson? I don't know. When we get back, I'll tell you what some fact checkers said. Then I want to hear, JP, I want you to tell me about the Joe Rogan podcast with Zuckerberg this morning. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one, Alabama, y'all. I'm talking about Alabama. But I mean to say, this show goes like from the top of Huntsville down to Birmingham and from Tuscaloosa back over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. And, oh, by the way, coming up on Monday, yeah, buddy, going live in Chattanooga. So we're looking forward to having WGOW in the Right Side family fold and WGOW News Talk out of Chattanooga live on the air with them coming up on Monday. Looking good, too. We're glad of it. They got all the stuff, too, right, JP? Everything's good?
All the stuff. We ready to go?
All the doings are done.
All the doings are done.
So we just do a show, and they hear it.
It's funny how that works, isn't it?
I like it. Hey, let me put a little more capstone on this this story about Meta. By the way, I just think they could have named it better. Meta.
Yeah.
Let's call our company Meta.
I can't remember what it was called before that, but yeah, I agree. It's kind of
Meta. Anyway, Meta, the parent company for Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, they made their changes. They're getting away from censorship. Well, the censors themselves are freaked out. The fact-checking organizations who have made a bunch of money off of this are pretty freaked out. Got a piece here from Barron's. Barron's Dateline Today. Headline, real world harm if Meta ends their fact checks, the global network warns. The level of histrionics in this one article. All right, it opens up by saying, the surprise announcement by Mark Zuckerberg has sparked alarms in countries such as Australia and Brazil. And I'm like, why do we care? In countries like Australia and Brazil, is that what we got to do? You know, Australia, how are they going to feel? Brazil, how are they going to feel about this? I just don't know.
I know the North Koreans up there. North Korea. They may throw a fit about that.
You know, Kim Jong, I mean, the guy's got it going on, and he's a little upset. So the tech tycoon, according to this article from Barron, says fact checkers were just too politically biased, and the program has led to too much censorship. You think? But the International Fact Checking Network, there's an International Fact Checking Network? Is there a club?
Evidently, yeah.
How do you get, there's a club for fact checkers.
Pretty much a bunch of social justice warriors.
Censors unite.
Censors unite. There you go.
Okay. It includes organizations like AFP and PolitiFact and all these others. Dozens of member organizations, apparently, around the globe. Anyway, here's what the things are saying, right? That Facebook has been paying to use fact checkers from 80 organizations globally, as well as on WhatsApp and Instagram. And that there could be devastating consequences if they follow through on this broad policy shift. Okay. Because there's like over 100 countries, they point out. The International Fact Checking Network has now warned that could be impacted. I'm going to read you a quote. Brace yourself. You ready?
Yep.
Quote from the Fact Checking Network. Quote, some of these countries are highly vulnerable to misinformation that spurs political instability, election interference, mob violence, and even genocide.
Oh, genocide.
Wait, there's more. Quote, if Meta decides to stop the program worldwide, it's almost certain to result in real-world harm in many places.
Oh, my goodness.
I kid you not. That's what I'm looking at it. That's I highlighted it. That's what it says.
Well, what was the New York Times headline of like?
Oh, yeah. It was more like a Babylon Bee.
I thought it was Babylon Bee when I first read it about Zuck saying that it would help to backtrack on the fact checkers. Fact checkers rule. This is false. It's a self-licking ice cream cone.
Yes, it is. Some of these countries, I'm going to read this again. Let's break this down. Some of these countries are highly vulnerable to misinformation, meaning you can't trust these other countries to understand truth. We have to give them truth. They won't understand it if you don't give it to them.
You have to spoon feed it to them.
Exactly. You have to help them to understand truth. And if they don't, then you have to basically smack them around and take away their misinformation. Next part of it. It spurs political instability. Wait a minute. You mean freedom of the press is bad for, I don't know, democracy?
Not controlling the narrative?
Yeah. What politics are they talking about? Like North Korea again?
Yeah.
Okay. It also can create election interference. You mean like, I don't know, Hunter Biden's laptop being actually made known before the election? It can create mob violence if we don't have fact-checking. Mob violence. What are they talking about now? Jan 6, insurrection!
Yep. Okay. That's I guarantee you that's what they're talking about.
And my favorite, it can even promote genocide to not have fact-checkers. Genocide. What? Is there an example I don't know about? Has there been some mass killing related to fact checkers not being allowed to stop a flow of misinformation?
I'm sure, knowing the fact checkers and their biasness, this is probably alluding to Israel and claiming that they're committing genocide in Gaza. I think that's initially where my brain went to.
Wow. So basically, if we don't allow censorship, then there's going to be genocide. And politics and the world will cave, and Brazil and Australia especially will go under.
Pretty much.
Okay. You told me that Zuck was on Joe Rogan this morning.
Yep.
And you also, by the way, you had some interesting observations about Zuckerberg and his own relationships to people that are actually, generally speaking, kind of conservative.
Yeah. So, I mean, for quite some time, I've been under the illusion that Zuck, I feel like he wasn't the one spearheading the censorship and all that. Obviously, he was in charge, and it happened under his watch. I'm not condoning that.
Yeah.
However, he's really good friends with Dana White, who, I'm a big UFC guy. Dana White is big Trump guy, free speech guy, anti-big government. And he would go to the UFCs and sit next to Dana and hang out with Dana. And, he also hung out with a bunch of UFC fighters that I knew were conservative. So I always felt like he was being misled and being, maybe gaslit or, whatever, to do what other people wanted him to do. And he mentioned that in the Joe Rogan podcast about how during COVID, the Biden administration would literally call him, scream at him, and say that he needed to take down posts that claimed that vaccines had side effects. And he pushed back. He said, you know, I'm not doing that. That's censoring free speech. And I guess eventually, you know, they ended up getting their way. Even with the Hunter Biden laptop, he was told by the government that it was Russian disinformation and he trusted them. And when he found out that it wasn't, he was extremely, you know, upset and appalled. So,
okay, but is that just somebody trying to rewrite history because he was complicit and he wants to try and throw somebody else under the bus now that Biden is leaving office?
I don't know, because like I said, for like years he's been, you know, people like Dana White wouldn't hang out with somebody like Zuck if, you know, Zuck was the one that was all free speech or all censorship, anti-free speech. You know, I find it hard to buy that Zuck is that guy. Now, like I said, I'm not condoning what happened. But I feel like he thought he was doing the right thing. And also, I'll say this: I'm not saying you should fully trust the Zuckerberg's change at first. Obviously, you need to see the proof that he's going to change his stuff. But we don't need to do the left strategy of canceling and not welcoming people in, because I think that's been a big, strong part of the Republican Party and why we won so big in November is because we welcome people, outsiders, in to our party. We didn't alienate people like the Democratic Party does. So I would say don't alienate Zuck in the sense of, you know, you could never trust him again. I wouldn't say that.
So here's my thoughts on that. I can't give him a full pass because he was in charge. Mm-hmm. That's like saying the general who made really bad decisions in a battle should get a pass because he wasn't the one who was pulling the trigger. Yeah. Well, he was the one who gave the orders. Mm-hmm. So Zuck gave the orders and the messaging got killed. So part of me says, I am willing to hear that Facebook, which is a prolific platform, Instagram, prolific platform with a lot of reach, I'm willing to hear that they're changing their policies and that he's seen the light. Mm-hmm. And I'm also willing to hear he has regrets. But I can't go down the road of, oh, he didn't mean it. You know, and I, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I can feel bad for the dude because of the pressure he was under, and then still know that he had the ability. I mean, look at Elon Musk. He has the ability to stand up. Elon Musk takes a lot of heat and has taken a lot of heat from the left. And Zuckerberg, in my opinion, you and I were talking about this earlier. I almost feel like there's a maturity thing. Like maybe he's finally growing up, if you know what mm-hmm. I'm saying. Because he got so rich so fast with a platform that just grew beyond his wildest expectations that it's almost as if it outgrew his maturity.
Yeah.
And now maybe his maturity is finally catching up.
And I think he's an agreeable guy by nature, probably. You know, he's not going to want to buck up to the government if they're telling him something is, you know, something like the Hunter Biden stuff. He probably just initially thought the government wasn't lying to him. You know, maybe he was naive. I don't know. But I think, like you said, he's seen the light. And I'll say this too, for any Republicans or people who who feel like this is maybe, I don't know what they think, but I'll just say take the win on this. Take the win that Facebook's changing. You know?
That's a great point. Yeah. No, I can live with that. Mm-hmm. Take the win. And that's a good point. The idea that we would sit there and just pick him apart. I'll talk about what happened. I'll lay the foundation for where we were and now apparently where we are and be glad of it. And I think you're right. Take the win. But at the same time, it's going to be trust but verify.
Yeah. And like I said, I think that's fair, obviously, but I've seen some people who say like we can never trust him. I wouldn't go down that route. Obviously, if he's willing to change his platform and, you know, set his regrets, I'd say take that as a win.
Here's what's going to happen though: if we have another Hunter Biden or COVID vaccine type message suppression from Facebook again in the future after he said everything that he said now, I think there's no forgiving him at that point.
No, yeah, exactly.
I think he's done. I think he's toast.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break right now. We'll take that break. We'll come right back and take some text messages. It just occurred to me we had scheduled 3:30 for JP on sports.
I was going to actually ask you to push it back if you didn't, because I wanted to stay on this for a little bit.
Okay,
so,
good.
There you go.
All right, so JP on sports is now at 4 o'clock.
There you go.
Okay, all right. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, flexible on Snowmageddon Day. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. Brand new texter in the line just says, is this Right Side? Yes, you've got us. That's us. Eric, the number is 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. You can text or call it. Just tell us who you are and where you're from so we can plug you in. Ed P. from Huntsville says, Phil Zuckerberg lies. I put up a bogus picture yesterday and Facebook wasted no time slapping a fact check on it. He says, real world harm to their bottom lines, maybe. He's talking about the fact checkers that are mad. I don't know. Thomas Mathis says, I am not willing to give Zuckerberg a pass on his multiple companies each canceling and deleting conservative facts. His $350 million Zuckerbucks to 2,500 election departments in 47 different states was a fundamental strategy in the Democrats' plans in enabling the voting processes to subvert the 2020 election. I had forgotten about Zuckerbucks. I need to look back on Zuckerbucks and see how all that came together and work. That's something that I've never done a segment on, but I probably should. And, you know, say what you want about whether he has seen the light of day or lessons learned. But, yeah, he has definitely weighed in heavy and influenced elections and information systems. He has. Butters weighed in. There's Butters. Butters says, if Zucks is changing with the market, is that a bad thing? Just more proof that capitalism is the best system. And I think that's the thing. I don't know for a fact whether he's seen the light, but I think he's certainly seen a change in the economic winds and the favor given to companies that will actually allow open discourse.
Like X. And I think he's seen how positive the community notes are and more effective than fact checkers.
And they cost less.
Yes. And also not censoring or hurting or shadow banning posts that do get community noted, because that's an infringement on free speech. Just have somebody simply correct something that was in the post and then move on. You don't have to take down 80% of its reach or anything like Facebook was doing. But like the truth will stand. It doesn't need any third party fact checkers, you know?
Now, how does community notes work? What if the community note-er is wrong? What if they're saying, that's not true, it's really this?
So there's a process you have to, like, on each post, there's an option to submit a request for a community note, and it gets reviewed. So you're not able to just community note something and
it
be wrong.
So you can't just lie for a community note.
I think you have to provide proof, too, that what you're saying is correct. So, yeah.
Like, here's the real story that you're quoting incorrectly.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
All right. I see that. Ben from Decatur says, regarding Facebook and Zuckerberg direction change, as Reagan said, instead, trust but verify. There's what I said a moment ago. Trust but verify. Proof will be in Facebook's actions over the times. Yes, indeedy. John from Harvest says, Phil, have you seen the New York Times headline? Yes, this is the one you're talking about. This is great. New York Times had a headline, and the Babylon Bee actually posted that they would like to talk to whoever made that headline and give them a job at the Bee. Because it said, here's it said, quote, Meta says fact checkers were a problem. Fact checkers rule that false.
Well, if they rule it false, then it must be false. But I love below that day from Madison, sent a screenshot from the Babylon Bee, actually from the Babylon Bee. It says, guy who said Facebook was not suppressing free speech and now says Facebook will stop suppressing free speech.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is like an admission that these things happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, on Rogan, he was telling this is what happened.
Yeah, and he admitted to it, and he said how he regretted it. It's just, you know, like I said, I think he was being naive and believed what the Biden administration was telling him. So we'll see. I don't know. I don't buy though. He's trying to cover his tracks. The people that I follow that are friends with him, I don't think would be friends with him if he was that guy. So that's just me. That's just my personal opinion on it.
All right. Well, JP, you are allowed to have your opinion.
You're not going to fact check me.
I'm not going to fact check your opinion. No, we're going to let that opinion stand. All right. Hey, listen, before we head to the top of the hour break, and we'll come back with some JP on sports, because there's a lot of sports to talk about, especially last night's game. I don't want to preempt, but I'm told that last night's game, which I did not watch, by the way, was one for the ages.
It was epic.
It was epic.
It was.
Okay.
I did. Yeah. I stayed up and watched all of it.
What time did you get over?
I think 10:30 or so. Wasn't
too
bad.
Not late.
But then I stayed up later after that.
You're young.
I stayed up later after that, is what I should say.
Call of Duty?
Yeah.
But hey, listen, I'll remind you guys about all the other stuff going on here at Right Side that you can get a hold of. So today is Friday. That means another round of Right Click podcast is out. Am I
right?
Actually,
did not come out today. He posted he's under the weather.
That's right. He has been sick.
He's been sick.
Okay, another one's coming out soon.
Yes.
But we do have a whole lot going on here at Right Side Media. It's not just Right Side Radio. Right Side Media is the parent company, just so you know. And Right Side Radio is only one production. So, yeah, we have the live show every single day. And then, oh, by the way, we take the live show and we podcast it so you can go get, if there's a part you heard, like the monologue today, and you want to check it out again, then you can go and get it at any given time on any one of the platforms like Podbean or Apple or, gosh, where else?
Spotify,
all of them. And that one, the podcast of the radio show, is you know, going to be approaching 300,000 downloads in the very near future. So check that out. But then we also have four video podcasts that come out on a regular basis. So we have The Right Philosophy. That's the one I do from my study at home. Love doing it. And it comes out every Wednesday. A new one just came out this week. And then we have Right Click on Fridays, typically, with Birdman. And that one is great because if you got somebody in your family, or you for that matter, who is like a gamer and into high tech, then conservative views in that genre are part of Right Click. And then we got Liberty Minute with former Navy SEAL Jared Hudson. And then we also got The Controversial Mom with Emily Jones. A lot of stuff going on here. And then, oh, by the way, we go live on the air in Chattanooga coming up next week. A lot of stuff happening at Right Side Media. Follow us, subscribe, do all the things. Check it all out at rightsidemedia.org, and we will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live from the Right Side Studio. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And, oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number three on a snow-covered Friday. And by the way, it is, according to my app, it's like below freezing outside right now, and it's raining. I don't understand. That should be snow.
Got to freeze them clouds. Clouds got to be frozen, I guess. It looks like it's snow, but I don't think it is. It looks like freezing rain.
No, I just looked out the window a minute ago, and you can see the rain hitting puddles.
Yeah.
All right, so if there's puddles, that's not frozen. And then there's rain, plinkety, plinkety, plink, and it's, you know, just whatever. All right, hey, listen. Be safe out there on the roads, because we do know that there are, you know, reports of potential freezing rain, black ice. Don't forget that. If you're driving, just please be extra careful, especially if you live in some of the elevated areas around our listening area. You know, the mountains, Montesano and Sand Mountain area, and others. There's any number of places where the roads are going to be more treacherous, and those sloping roads can be pretty tough too. So just be careful. Be mindful. Drive slower. You'll be glad you did. All right, let's do this. It's a thing we do every week. JP is like the man when it comes to sports. Has his own radio show on Saturday mornings, for those who didn't already know, called Off the Bench on the Ump out of Huntsville. And yeah, he knows more about sports like each week than I've ever known in my whole life. So we just do a segment every Friday, and we call it JP on Sports. JP on Sports. All right, there you go. There's your sound effect. We do the thing in two waves. The first section is called the three and out, and the second section is called the 2-minute warning. Three and out, you pick the top three stories. Ready? Go.
Well, we were talking about it earlier, but the Orange Bowl was last night.
It was.
The epic Orange Bowl last night, where Notre Dame ended up winning 27-24, outlasting Penn State in that one. It was magnified by a crucial mistake by Drew Allard in the game, where Penn State had the ball. They were driving down the field. They were relatively close to field goal range with about a minute left, and Drew Allard, the quarterback for Penn State, threw an interception. The last thing in that situation, the last thing you do is turn the ball over, which he did, and then Notre Dame was able to get it into field goal range and kick the game-winning field goal. So Penn State's now out, and Notre Dame moves on to the national championship game, where they will play the winner of Ohio State, Texas tonight, which I'll be talking about in a little bit. But yeah, it was an awesome game of back and forth with a. It was almost like a shin of which team wanted to lose more, in the sense of they kept just turning it over. But it was awesome in that sense of, like, you didn't know what was coming next. But yeah, it was a funny stat from that game, actually. You know, Drew Allard did not play very great in that game at all. He was carried by his two running backs and his tight end, Tyler Warren, who's one of the best players in the nation. He did not have, or Penn State as a whole, did not have a single stat for a wide receiver in that game.
Not one?
Not one. Zero catches for 0 yards for the wide receivers on Penn State's team. So all of the passes were screen passes to the running backs or tight ends, and there weren't many passes at all in general. So, yeah, it was kind of a crazy stat. Shows you that Penn State Jarrell kind of struggled in that game, and it showed. But
was that a question of the secondary being so good? They couldn't play it, or was it his arm having trouble?
He did not make great decisions. He was not very accurate. So yeah, it was mainly Jarrell just struggling, and Notre Dame was able to capitalize on it. But like I said, with Jarrell struggling like that, they still had a chance to win, and at the end. So that just shows how good Tyler Warren and the Penn State running backs are.
And a score like that is what you should want in a championship game like this.
Yeah,
you know, you don't want a blowout game. That just says it was unevenly stacked.
Yeah, I thought this would be the closest game so far in the playoff between, because they were very evenly matched. I thought and Riley Leonard, the quarterback for Notre Dame, who's actually from Fairhope, Alabama, is now moving on to the national championship. And also, there's a good clip of after the game. I saw somebody texted in mentioning that this was the most epic part from the game of, ESPN tried to they were interviewing Marcus Freeman, the coach for Notre Dame, who's awesome, great coach. And in the past, they tried to push this narrative with him, and he's kind of, pushed it away of, first black head coach this, first black head coach that, where they tried to do it again of last night on the podium with the trophy with his players. That he would be the first black head coach going to the national championship, and he responded with something like, "It doesn't matter Asian, white, whatever nationality you are, whatever skin color your skin is, what's important is these players," and gave the right answer, and the whole place went nuts.
He didn't buy the narrative.
No, he did not, and he's a strong Christian man who actually brought back a lot of the Christian traditions that apparently went away for Notre Dame's football team, like pregame mass and stuff like that. So he's a great coach, great guy. So I'm happy to see him doing well for Notre Dame there too.
All right. Well, good deal. All right. Three and out. There's one. What you got?
Tonight we got Ohio State, Texas in the Cotton Bowl, I believe it is. They'll be playing the winner, or they'll be playing Notre Dame. The winner of this game will be in the national championship. This game, I do not have hopes will be as competitive as last night's game was.
Really?
I'm not, Ohio State, with how they're playing right now, they're playing like 6 feet above the ground, it seems like. They're untouchable. And Texas, they let Arizona State off the map last week when they had them in the position they wanted. They let them come back and almost win. I mean, they were this close to losing that game when they had Arizona State dead to rights. So I have not seen Texas play a full 60-minute game yet this year. They've had great moments, and they have a great defense, but I've just not seen them put it all together yet once this year. And like I said, with Ohio State, how they're playing right now, they just dog-stomped Oregon, which was by far the best team in college football all year. That's not an easy one. So with how they're playing, the momentum they got, they have a big chip on their shoulder, obviously, with how the season ended with the loss to Michigan. And then Ryan Day, I firmly believe, is coaching for his job right now. Because they're fed up with not being able to beat Michigan. He needs a national championship under his belt. So I think all things considered, I think Ohio State will win this game by like 2 touchdowns, I think.
Wow.
I think it will be pretty I think it'll be pretty convincing.
So you're looking at Ohio State, Notre Dame in the championship.
That would be my prediction. And then I think Ohio State would beat Notre Dame in that game as well. So Ohio State, I've been saying this before, they spent $20 million on their roster. And that right now in the playoffs, we're seeing the rewards for that because they're playing like a $20 million roster. They have the best roster in college football.
Wow.
So we'll see. If they keep playing like they have been playing, it should be a pretty convincing win for Ohio State.
So the SEC is not in the mix at that point.
Nope. Texas is I guess they're an SEC team now of Texas, yeah.
Yes, they are. admit that they're apparently in the SEC.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think the SEC has – I think they're just – there weren't enough teams that were able to win at all, I'll say that. So.
All right, three and out, that's two. You got 3 minutes. What's left?
The NFL playoffs also start this weekend.
Holy cow.
They start tomorrow night. You got Houston playing the Chargers, and then you also have the Steelers and the Ravens playing for the AFC. And then Sunday we have 3 more games. We got the Commanders playing the Bucks, the Eagles playing the Commanders, and let's start that over. Commanders playing the Bucks, Eagles playing the Packers, and the Broncos are playing the Bills. That's the Sunday slate. So I'm very interested to see who's going to win this NFL this year. I have no idea. I mean, teams are in the mix. I don't think the Buccaneers have much of a chance, but like the Commanders would be a fun team to watch. They got a rookie quarterback of Jaden Daniels who's been playing lights out all year. Be in the MVP conversation. But then obviously they're not playing this weekend, but the Chiefs only had one loss on the year. So they're looking to three-peat. I think the first team to ever three-peat. Yeah, there's a lot of fun teams in the mix. I don't want to see the Chiefs three-peat, personally. So hopefully hopefully Josh Allen and the Bills, I think that's their best competition. Hopefully they can knock them off before they get to the Super Bowl if the Bills win this weekend against the Broncos. I know John's a Broncos fan, but I would take the Bills in that one. But yeah, there's a lot of fun young teams in the playoffs this year. So I'm excited to see how they do, and hopefully don't let the Chiefs win at all.
Wow. Okay. So, but that's football, football, football on the top three.
Yeah, we got to mix in the next. Don't worry. Okay. I saved it for the 2 minute.
All right. What do you think? Take a break?
Yeah. Go
all ahead, right. We'll take the break. That's round one of JP on Sports. So you heard it. He's got his predictions in for what's going to happen in the Texas Ohio State game tonight. Notre Dame is playing whoever takes that game. And then, NFL. Wow. That's big doings. All right. Phil Williams. Right Side Radio. More JP on Sports. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. All right. We're back with JP on Sports. Round number two, we call the two-minute warning. I've actually got a timer here. And JP runs the gamut of stories. 2 minutes, no more each. There's a buzzer that sounds if it goes longer. JP, two-minute warning. Ready? Go.
All right. Well, college basketball is now underway in conference play. We have the SEC play started this week. Alabama opened up at South Carolina, where they ended up winning 88-68. And then Auburn opened up at Texas, where they won 87-82. But other teams like Tennessee, who were number one, were not so lucky. They lost by 30 to Florida, I believe it was. Yeah, it was Florida. So I think that right there shows how good the SEC is this year. Like, the number one team in the nation lost by 30 to another SEC team is pretty nuts. Kentucky also was ranked in the top 10, and then they lost by, I believe, like 14 at Georgia. So Georgia, Georgia's basketball team is going to be in the mix this year too. So widespread, like, across the board, SEC is just really, really good. So Alabama will actually be playing at Texas A&M this weekend, who is a highly ranked team as well. And then Auburn will be going to South Carolina to play. So SEC competition continues. Continue to say February 15th, first round of the IBOB this year, where it looks like it's going to be a top five matchup. So we'll keep tracking. But also with Tennessee losing, looks like Auburn's going to be number one if they win this weekend.
Woo! That would be something. And by the way, I saw a headline that said conference play begins. The SEC has spent most of the season beating up on teams outside the conference. Now they'll beat up on themselves.
Yep, pretty much. I could see the winner of the SEC this year having like 8 to 10 losses, which never happens. So they normally have like 2 or 3 conference losses. But we'll see. It's going to be survival of the fittest this year in the SEC. And it looks like Alabama and Auburn are sitting at the top right now. So it's going to be fun. State of Alabama sitting at the top, not only in football across the board, but basketball now too. So it's a fun change of scenery there.
Alabama is the heart of the SEC. Yeah, thank you very much. The state of Alabama.
Yes.
All right, that's 2 minutes. Hit it, buzzer. Okay, next 2 minutes. Let me reset the clock. Ready? Go.
Well, staying on the thread of basketball, Auburn, the Auburn head coach Bruce Pearl became Auburn's winningest coach this past week with the win over Texas. He passed Joel Eaves, which I never even heard of, but the picture of him was in black and white, so I assume most people don't even know of him. But he became the winningest coach with 214 wins. So he spent 11 years at Auburn. He's completely flipped that program around. You know, back during the, I believe it would be the 80s where Charles Barkley was there.
Yeah.
I can't remember who the coach was during that period, but so there was a little gap, you know, the early 2000s and such, where Auburn basketball was just kind of dead. And then them taking a chance on Bruce Pearl to come in, history, and, you know, they gave him a second chance, and he's proven them correct on that, because, you know, him becoming the most winningest coach in Auburn history and then also taking them to their first Final Four, you know, looks like that decision was correct and a good move on their end. So Bruce Pearl is continuing to make Auburn top, not only just the SEC, but in the mix every year, even the years where they don't do so well in March. I mean, they're still in the mix. Last year, they were a number two seed. So he's revived that program. He's brought excitement back, and now he's the most winningest coach. Will he get a statue? I believe he will. Put it right next to the Charles Barkley statue in front of Auburn's basketball arena. But, yeah, it's been it's been fun to watch. Even as an Alabama fan, I got to respect Bruce Pearl and what he's done with the Auburn program. So I don't know how much longer he'll have coaching in basketball. I know he's kind of getting up there in age, but the legacy has been set at Auburn. So props to Bruce Pearl for that.
Very, very much so. And, you know, what's cool, too, is he's not just a successful coach, which, you know, rallies the fans. But he's a personality that the fans love.
Oh yeah, he was shirtless in the student section of a football game with Cam Newton. You know, like the students are gonna love that. So
2 minutes. There you go. All right, reset the clock and go.
Well, quickly going back to college football real quick. There was a bunch of big announcements for Alabama. They kept Deontay Lawson, Keon Sabb, Damani Jackson, and several other big defense players. Decided that they are coming back to Alabama for another year. So. You know, for any Alabama fans, whatever your reservations are on DeBoer, you weren't happy about how this first year went. You know, I guess that's fair, but I will say DeBoer's ability to retain players in this day and age of NIL, where guys go into a new school every year signing a new contract, has been very impressive. You know, his ability not just to keep, you know, lower end guys, but these are starters. These are guys that I guarantee were getting chatter from other teams. You know, come over here, I'll pay you some money. And his ability to have them stay at Alabama is very impressive, and I think that just speaks to how much the players like DeBoer. So I would say that's a very good sign for any Alabama fans out there who are, you know, a little worrisome about, you know, this new era of DeBoer. Today is actually the one-year anniversary that Saban retired, so it's fully been 1 year now under the DeBoer experience. I would put this as a green flag, the fact that top players are deciding to stay instead of leave in this era where they can make millions of dollars going anywhere, them deciding to stay at Alabama, I would take that as a positive sign. So big news for Alabama football, being able to keep those guys. And then obviously Ryan Williams will be returning for another year on offense. We got Ty Simpson coming back on offense. Guys like Keelan Russell. Alabama football is going to be just fine roster-wise next year. We'll see if after next year you still want to have reservations. If Alabama flops, that's fine. But he's doing his part right now, keeping the team together for next year and building up a solid roster. So I would say good signs for Alabama and Kalen DeBoer right now.
And he stopped wearing T-shirts on the sidelines.
Yeah, he stopped wearing sloppy T-shirts. So we'll see if he upgrades his wardrobe next year. Maybe he comes out in a suit or something. I don't know. Just,
you know.
go all the way.
Go classy, man.
Gotta go all the way.
Go classy or go home.
A top hat.
2 minutes. There you go. Hit it. Reset the button. How much time do we have?
We got about 45 seconds.
What you got for 45 seconds?
Another big storyline that came out yesterday, Carson Beck, the quarterback for Georgia, he initially declared for the draft, and then yesterday decided to change his mind, enter the transfer portal, and then the next day committed to Miami. So Carson Beck of Georgia, who initially declared for the draft, decided to change his mind, enter the portal, and is now playing for the Miami Hurricanes. It's a fact that his girlfriend though goes to Miami, so I think that's a
And I guarantee it's a fact that there's some NIL money involved.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Just a little bit, but also I think he saw the writing on the wall with how Gunnar Stockton was playing. I think he understood that he was the guy. Carson Beck didn't have a great year. He ended up getting hurt, tearing his UCL and his elbow. So I think this is probably the best move for him. I didn't think him going to the draft was the best move. He would be like a 6th round pick in my opinion. But yeah, he'll be going down to Miami to play, to be in school with his girlfriend, who is Hannah Cavender, who is a very popular women's basketball player at Miami. So I think that had something to do with it too. But yeah,
nice. All right, there you go. With 1 minute left, you cleared it. The 2 minute warnings. JP on sports, good stuff, man. Good job. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll come right back. The U-Haul report. Have you heard about that? We'll talk about it. Hey, all you Right Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right, just covering down on some major ground across the most beautiful state in the nation, the one that I'm in, the one I love, Alabama, y'all, Alabama. And I mean, this show goes like from the top of Huntsville down to Birmingham, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. And oh, by the way, have you heard? Have you heard the news? Anyway, we go live on WGOW 1150 AM out of Chattanooga on Monday. So we're excited to take Right Side to become a regional show. The first, what we hope will be many, and there are actually some interesting conversations that are happening right now that we hope to have announcements coming in the near future. But in the meantime, just know this, we look forward to joining East Tennessee, Northwest Georgia, Northeast Alabama into the Right Side Radio Ruffian Fold. That comes out on Monday. So all good stuff. I got some text messages. I got to catch up on the text messages. I mean, if we're going to be here live on Snowmageddon Day, and people are going to be like tuning in like they are in a big, big way, and they're texting messages, I got to read these texts.
You better read them out.
I got to read them out. TL from Huntsville says, as a further mention about Mark Zuckerberg's priorities, he has had many visits to China and openly admired the Chinese form of government. Okay, interesting. Thomas from Athens says, H.R. 8291, introduced by Representative Tenney, House Ways and Means, there's a cornucopia of articles regarding Zuckerbucks. Definitely Zuckerbucks. Definitely worth a right segment. Yeah, it is. And so, you know what? I may wind up doing that next week. I think as Zuckerberg is in the please forgive me mode, you know, I'm of the mind that forgiveness can be readily given, but accountability can still be had.
Yeah.
Just because you're forgiven does not mean that the penalties are gone.
I'm actually not as aware of the Zuckerbucks. So.
Well,
I've heard of it. I'm just not fully aware of how deep it goes.
All right. Note to self. I'm making a note. Zuckerbucks. We're going to do a segment on this. I got to figure this out. I gotta put this out there in ruffian land. All right, I actually did write it down.
Yeah, he did.
John from Huntsville says, JP, I just want to let you know, in your honor, I created an NFL playoff bracket group on ESPN titled King of Gen Z. In case you're interested, if I'm not, I'm going solo.
I'm interested. I'll text him.
Check it out, King of Gen Z. Pastor Carl from Decatur says, I was censored and threatened with expulsion by Facebook for stating that the man in Ames, Iowa, who received 16 years for burning the rainbow flag, free speech rights were violated compared to burning the American flag. Pastor Carl, I have no doubt, brother. I have no doubt. And oh, by the way, not that you need my affirmation, but you were right. Steve from Harvest says, the way to combat this is to use the rate it button. That's quote, rate it button on a community note. You vote yes to the is this note useful question in the dialogue that pops up to counteract all the no votes. Interesting. I've never done that. Have you?
I have, yeah. I think Elon's nailed it with that. I think truth can stand on its own with correction that doesn't, like I said earlier, diminish its reach or punish somebody because they were wrong.
Yeah.
And also, you know, the fact of, you know, fact checkers like to cry about how they have to protect disinformation or misinformation. You know, if you see something that you don't like or you think is wrong, there's a really interesting thing you could do. It's called this move with your butt. It's called the scroll. You know, you can scroll past it and then you forget it ever existed. It's fine.
For people who weren't watching you online, you were doing the thumb move.
You scroll. Yeah. And then the community notes will correct it. So there you go. You don't have to punish anybody.
Crazy how that works.
It's nuts. Yeah.
It's called Don't Read It.
Don't Read It, yeah, and move on.
Chris from Gadsden says, people said Alabama. Oh, two things. He corrected me. I said it's freezing outside. He says Gadsden's EMA app says 34 degrees. James Spann app says 33 degrees. Yeah, my app says something like that too, but it says feels like 28. So if it feels like 28, make it snow. That's what I say.
It feels like it. It is it. Is it
Come not? On. Chris also said, Chris from Gadsden, people said Alabama couldn't have been that good because they lost to Michigan, but Ohio State also lost to Michigan.
Yeah. And they're probably about to pin the national championship.
And by the way, Chris from Gadsden's an Alabama fan, an Alabama graduate. So yeah. Badger from Athens says, I've been calling Notre Dame versus the Buckeyes for a minute. Go Buckeyes.
We'll see. I'm betting on that to be the national championship. Texas comes out and, proves me wrong, but I haven't seen it yet.
Brian from Huntsville says, go OSU. Wait, go OSU? Did he say
that's
that?
That's Ohio State, yeah.
Yeah, he did say go OSU. Go OSU for another UT in the SEC, especially since they were founded about 100 years after Knoxville. And he says Tide player region ratio payroll Tide. What's he saying? What's that mean?
I think he's probably saying that DeBoer paid the players to stay, which, hey, oh! That's legal now.
Apparently that's legal. It's also screwing up football as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it is.
All right, listen, text it or call it 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. So I'm going to spend the last few minutes of the show. It's time for the annual review of the U-Haul report. Oh, yeah. Let me have some, give me a hallelujah. Can I have a hallelujah for this? The U-Haul report. Thank you. So the U-Haul report is, it's pretty funny. If you're not familiar with this, U-Haul does an annual growth index, they call it, where U-Haul realized one day they had a thing going on. Like, people are moving. They got to rent a truck or a trailer. But U-Haul, being as broad-based as it is, you don't have to return it to the site. You can do one-way travel. U-Haul realized, hang on a second, let us look at things like, the census, population bases. And they recognized that the U-Hauls going one way were actually matching up and sometimes were even better indicators of the migration of peoples to and from certain states. And so they started doing their growth index. Y'all, it's spot on. Every year they issue the U-Haul growth index based upon, and they do it every January. And, you know, just this year, again, in the last couple of days, we now have the 2024 U-Haul Annual Growth Index. Pray tell, what state do you believe, or let me ask you this, JP, if you were to predict which states were seeing more outgoing one-way rentals, would they be blue states or red states?
Blue and on fire right now.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then it would stand to reason then that the red states are receiving more.
Yep, I would say so.
One-way rentals of U-Haul trailers and trucks going out of or into states is a clear indication of the growth of those states. So South Carolina, controlled by the GOP in 8 of the 9 states, 9 executive offices, in addition to its governorship, state house, and state senate, topped the list with arrivals, having 51.7% of all one-way U-Haul traffic in and out of state in 2024.
Wow.
So South Carolina is in growth mode. South Carolina, oh, by the way, is a red state.
Through and through.
Through and through. Liberal states, according to the article I've got here on Wokespy, says saw the fastest new arrival. I'm sorry. I got that backwards. California, for the fifth year in a row, ranked at the bottom of all the 50 states. Right behind Massachusetts, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania. I'm sorry. Are those all heavily blue states? Yes.
Pennsylvania is, you know, even though they voted red last time around, they still got Philadelphia and very much blue areas.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, Massachusetts, New Jersey, New York. Wow. But, yeah, California. So the regions of the United States, regions that are seeing more U-Haul one-way traffic in other words, growth, would be, where do you think? If you had to name the regions.
The South, the Southeast, are there?
Southeast and Southwest.
Wow.
So Texas is really picking up a lot.
Yeah.
So I've got this growth index, and what's interesting is to look at it, and it makes you, okay, so our listening audience is largely Alabama and Tennessee. Where are Alabama and Tennessee? You might be curious to find out. Alabama moved up 22 spots.
Wow.
To number 16 on the list. So Alabama saw a huge influx. We are number 16 this year. That's a 22-point climb over the year prior. So 2023 to 2024, Alabama went up 16 spots. Tennessee, number 5 in the nation.
Wow.
For influx of one-way rentals from U-Haul.
Tennessee doesn't have a state income tax. Is that correct?
Florida doesn't.
For some reason, I thought Tennessee didn't as well. I was wondering if that contributed to that number too.
I don't know the answer to that.
It's interesting. I wouldn't have guessed Tennessee would be up there that high.
And by the way, that's a climb of 5 points. They were in 10th place last year, and now they're in 5th. So that's pretty. Are you looking up you're looking up the income tax thing? Yeah, I mean, what we're looking at right now is the list of top states are South Carolina, then Texas, then North Carolina, then Florida, and then Tennessee. That's the top five. Not too far down the list, Georgia and Alabama at 15 and 16.
Tennessee does not have an income tax.
It does not.
Mm-mm. So I think that contributes to that number.
Well, now. If you're going to tell me that Tennessee did away with teachers' unions, I'm going to say let's move to Tennessee. where is Florida? Oh, Florida's number four. Okay, here's your southeastern states then. You ready? South Carolina is number one. North Carolina is number three. Florida is number four. Tennessee, number five. Scroll down the list a little bit. Arkansas is number 12. Arkansas, really? It's a 17-point climb for them.
Sarah Huckabee doing a good job over there, apparently.
Over there in Arkansas. Georgia, Alabama, 15 and 16. Virginia, does that count as southeast?
I don't think so. It's borderline.
It was the cradle of the Confederacy.
I was about to say, I think that adds to its credibility, but
the Mason-Dixon line did go north. But then I look at some of the where else we got in the southeastern states. Anybody else in there? I'm trying to find where. Let's see. I don't see Louisiana anywhere. But Louisiana's typically got a lot of blue stuff going on. Although we have a lot of conservatives there too. Louisiana's 44th. They're dominated by the New Orleans politics and stuff like that. And then of course dead last California. But this is really, I love the fact that U-Haul realized the impact they were having.
It's a good report
mm-hmm. and it works. I got a bunch of other articles on this stuff like this, but we got to take a break right now. We'll take the break. We'll come right back. Last break of the day on a snow-covered Friday. You guys be careful on the roads. Stay tuned. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. All right, listen, text it or call it 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. So I'm going to spend the last few minutes of the show. It's time for the annual review of the U-Haul report. Let me have some. Give me a hallelujah. Can I have a hallelujah for this? The U-Haul report. Thank you. So the U-Haul report is pretty funny. If you're not familiar with this, U-Haul does an annual growth index, they call it, where U-Haul realized one day they had a thing going on. Like, people are moving. They got to rent a truck or a trailer. But U-Haul, being as broad-based as it is, you don't have to return it to the site. You can do one-way travel. U-Haul realized, hang on a second. Let us look at things like, the census, population bases. And they recognized that the U-Hauls going one way were actually matching up and sometimes were even better indicators of the migration of peoples to and from certain states. And so they started doing their growth index. Y'all, it's spot on. Every year they issue the U-Haul growth index based upon, and they do it every January. And, just this year, again, in the last couple of days, we now have the 2024 U-Haul annual growth index. Pray tell, what state do you believe, or let me ask you this, JP, if you were to predict which states were seeing more outgoing one-way rentals, would they be blue states or red states?
Blue and on fire right now.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then it would stand to reason then that the red states are receiving more.
Yep. I would say so.
One-way rentals of U-Haul trailers and trucks going out of or into states is a clear indication of the growth of those states. So South Carolina, controlled by the GOP in eight of the nine states, nine executive offices, in addition to its governorship, state house, and state senate, topped the list with arrivals, having 51.7% of all one-way U-Haul traffic in and out of state in 2024.
Wow.
So South Carolina is in growth mode. South Carolina, oh, by the way, is a red state.
Through and through.
Through and through. Liberal states, according to the article I've got here on Wokespy, says saw the fastest new arrival. Oh, I'm sorry. I got that backwards. California, for the fifth year in a row, ranked at the bottom of all the 50 states. Right behind Massachusetts, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania. I'm sorry. Are those all heavily blue states? Yes.
Pennsylvania is, you know, even though they voted red last time around, they still got Philadelphia and very much blue areas.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, Massachusetts, New Jersey, New York. Wow. But, yeah, California. So the regions of the United States, regions that are seeing more U-Haul one-way traffic in other words, growth, would be, where do you think, if you had to name the regions?
The South, the Southeast are there.
Southeast and Southwest.
Wow.
So Texas is really picking up a lot.
Yeah.
So I've got this growth index, and what's interesting is to look at it, and it makes you, okay, so our listening audience is largely Alabama and Tennessee. Where are Alabama and Tennessee? You might be curious to find out. Alabama moved up 22 spots.
Wow.
To number 16 on the list. So Alabama saw a huge influx. We are number 16 this year. That's a 22-point climb over the year prior. So 2023 to 2024, Alabama went up 16 spots. Tennessee, number 5 in the nation.
Wow.
For influx of one-way rentals from U-Haul.
Tennessee doesn't have a state income tax. Is that correct?
Florida doesn't.
For some reason, I thought Tennessee didn't as well. I was wondering if that contributed to that number too.
I don't know the answer to that.
It's interesting. I wouldn't have guessed Tennessee would be up there that high.
And by the way, that's a climb of 5 points. They were in 10th place last year, and now they're in 5th. So that's pretty. Are you looking up you're looking up the income tax thing? Yeah, I mean, what we're looking at right now is the list of top states are South Carolina, then Texas, then North Carolina, then Florida, and then Tennessee. That's the top 5. Not too far down the list, Georgia and Alabama at 15 and 16.
Tennessee does not have an income tax.
It does not.
Mm-mm. So I think that contributes to that number.
Well, now. If you're going to tell me that Tennessee did away with teachers' unions, I'm going to say let's move to Tennessee. where is Florida? Oh, Florida's number 4. Okay, here's your southeastern states then. You ready? South Carolina is number 1. North Carolina is number 3. Florida is number 4. Tennessee, number 5. Scroll down the list a little bit. Arkansas is number 12. Arkansas, really? It's a 17-point climb for them.
Sarah Huckabee doing a good job over there, apparently.
Over there in Arkansas. Georgia, Alabama, 15 and 16. Virginia, does that count as Southeast? I don't think so.
It's borderline.
It was the cradle of the Confederacy.
I was about to say, I think that adds to its credibility, but
the Mason-Dixon line did go north. But then I look at some of the, see where else we got in the southeastern states. Anybody else in there? I'm trying to find where, let's see. I don't see Louisiana anywhere. But Louisiana's typically got a lot of blue stuff going on. Although we have a lot of conservatives there too. Louisiana's 44th. They're dominated by the New Orleans politics and stuff like that. And then of course dead last California. But this is really, I mean, I love the fact that U-Haul realized the impact they were having.
It's
a good report, and it works. I got a bunch of other articles on this, stuff like this, but we got to take a break right now. We'll take the break. We'll come right back. Last break of the day on a snow-covered Friday. You guys be careful on the roads. Stay tuned. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Man, making common sense like a superpower. All right, so not to be outdone by U-Haul, Realtor.com has been looking at what their database indicates about trending. And they've recognized that they can also see through their own like online listings, like when people are searching listings, what states are getting the most searches. And it tends to line up. I mean, think about it. If you're renting the one-way U-Haul, you got to go somewhere. That means you're probably looking for a place to live. Realtor.com is a national database. And so, yeah, that's...
It makes sense.
It does make sense. And so you got, what they can also do is they can see mass migration, like what states have the most people that are looking for homes in other states.
And putting up theirs for sale.
And yes, exactly. Mass migration, they point out, has a lot to do with real estate prices, which have shot up astronomically in blue states like California and New York. And then it says, in California, for example, residents that have been home shopping for out of state were most commonly checking out listings in, what do you think? What state had the most online looks for houses?
Probably South Carolina.
This was Florida.
Oh, wow.
This one was Florida. I mean, South Carolina, they might be moving there for rentals. And so yeah, like, who knows? True. But Texas was close behind that, followed by Arizona. And Tennessee was one of the tops. Well, that pretty much lines up with the listings that we talked about.
Yeah, it's pretty close.
So yeah, so it's funny when you see these service industries like U-Haul, like Realtor.com, and they can predict migration because they're realizing, hey, we've got data, and the data actually matches life. And then they also get into property values. They can see that literally, here's the headline for this article from Realtor.com's own website that came out just a few months ago. Blue state residents are fleeing to red states for lower house prices. But locals warn, please don't bring your politics.
Yeah.
I think that the bulk of them, those who get assigned, like, you know, Huntsville is a largely government, not largely, but has a large government base of employees. And so those who get assigned to a red state can bring their politics. Those, in my opinion, that are moving willingly to get away from a blue state are probably bringing what we would consider to be a more conservative worldview with them.
Well, I always had been worried that with Huntsville's numbers skyrocketing from places or people of other states that it would, you know, turn more purple. But it was pretty dang red in this last election. So
still is, absolutely.
Yeah, it will. You know, although Huntsville is going up in numbers tremendously, they're sticking true to their values.
I don't think Randall Woodfin from Birmingham would ever get elected mayor of Huntsville.
I was just about to say, I would credit the 22 spot increase in that to Tommy Battle, who is bringing in jobs to the state, not to people like Woodfin or Reed, who are running their cities into the ground. And they're probably going to try to coattail it and, you know, claim some credit. You don't get to claim credit for that.
Nope.
You are not the reason.
Yeah. Know? And you also, by the way, you can't claim that there's something being done to keep you down, because just literally an hour north of you, nobody's being kept down.
And are thriving.
On the same state laws.
Yeah.
Closing up the last of the text here on a Snowmageddon Friday. David from Madison says Tennessee does not, nor does Florida, nor Texas does not.
State income tax.
State income tax.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. I knew Florida. I did not know about Texas. Oh, man, that's life right there. Dave from Madison sends me a text about Zuckerberg owing restitution to those he tried to destroy from the Federalist. I will check that out. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Jeff from Indiana says, my backyard is a winter wonderland. He sent a picture. Oh, man, that's got to be like a foot of snow.
I love the snow on the trees. That look, it looks
real
cool.
That's gorgeous. And then John from Huntsville has the grades in on a Friday afternoon. He says, Phil gets an A++ for his magnificent performance. However, today's winner is obviously JP. With a perfect Snowmageddon-sized A++, congratulations, you're truly the king of Gen Z. You know why? Because you said you'd join his pick'em.
I know how to work the grades here.
Teacher's pet.
I need to get a crown that says king of Gen Z.
King of Gen Z.
I need it.
So wait, is king of Gen Z you or him?
That's me right there.
Oh.
Yeah.
King of Gen Z.
Yep.
All right.
Self-proclaimed.
We need to have a sign for you.
Undisputed.
I've still got my right side radio commander sign over here. Now we need one for you that says JP, King of Gen Z.
Need a little plaque.
All right. Listen, you guys be safe on the roads, all right? Absolutely. Watch what you're doing. I mean, it's not like it's like Colorado snow out there. But you're also in a place where no one knows how to drive in it. So just be careful when you're out and about. And come Monday, I'm looking forward to the fact that Monday we are a regional show live across North Alabama, Northwest Georgia, East Tennessee, all at one time. That's just nothing but good doings. I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah, I'm excited to welcome in some new ruffians.
Between that and our streaming numbers going up like they are. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this is Right Side Media's got what I would call a freshness about it, along with everything else, it seems like, in 2025. But in the meantime, just know this. We credit it all to you guys, all right? We sit here and talk every day, but if y'all aren't there listening, if you're not responding, if you're not calling yourselves Right Side Ruffians and wearing our t-shirt, then listen, what difference does it make? So it is this audience that has helped us to get to where we are, and we do not take that for granted. Having said all that, I will say this. There are more of us than there are of them. God is very much still on his throne. Stay in the fight. We'll see you Monday.